Hello, friends. So it is either March, June, September, or December. And with that being said, which you're probably like, why are you telling me this? I know what month it is. But those are the months that I get migraine shots. If you want more information about why or just my health journey in general, check out any of the Spoonie Life episodes, particularly, I believe, Spoonie Life Part 3 or 4 from Season 1 is where you'll get, I think, the most detailed, like, this is what I deal with, this is kind of what I do, etc. So, generally, I do batch recording, and what that means is I record a couple months in a row, and then I put out the content when I know that I'm going to be sicker. Obviously, with chronic health, you never quite know how you're going to feel from day to day, but I try to plan ahead. So just know that if there's any reference to time or time since a certain time happened or whatever, that is why it may be a little bit different, because we will be talking about when we're currently recording, how much time has passed since X, Y, and Z versus when the episode airs, that's how much time has passed, if that makes any sense. But anyways, let's dive into the episode. I hope you enjoy it. I know it's going to be a good one. Every single guest that I chat with and will be chatting with in the future is amazing, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear it. So let's dive in. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Beautiful Legacy Podcast. I am your host, Abigail Gagnon, and today we are going to be talking all about the thyroid and all of the different kinds of thyroid conditions and all of those type of things. And we have a special guest with us, Esther. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Like you said, my name is Esther, and I am the mom of four boys. My husband and I live in Minnesota, way out in the country. We've got a whole ton of chickens, and I homeschool two of my boys, and then the other two go to a public school. I believe that education, just like health, everything has to fit you. And that just really encompasses like my philosophy on life. Every single person is unique. Everybody has their own path in life. And it is my job as a mom, as an nurse, as a health educator, it is my job to help facilitate people finding that right path. So that's kind of what I do. My specialty is in Hashimoto's. I switched to that after like 17 years in Western medicine. I worked in the ER for a really long time, loved that. And then I just got fed up by putting like short-term band-aids on long-term chronic things. And I went back to school for holistic health education. And like that's my sweet spot, because helping people really truly heal and make a difference for the future, that is just so rewarding. So that is a little bit about me.
That is so awesome. I love that. I have a friend that has a lot of different kids and stepkids and all of that. And some of her kids go to public school, some of them go to private school. She homeschools one or two of them. And I just think that it's really important. And one of the things I think is great about homeschooling in particular is like you can cater like the learning style to how the kid learns versus just being like, you're going to sit here and you're going to listen to me talk and then take a test.
Exactly. Yes. That doesn't work for most kids. A lot of kids can adapt to it, but it doesn't work for most. We're really fortunate that my two kids who go to a public school, their school is interest-led and project-based. So even there, they don't like sit still for a long time. They're constantly moving and doing and learning by experience. It's really cool.
That is really awesome. And getting to our topic, can you tell us what the thyroid is and why it's important for our overall health?
Yeah. So the thyroid is a little gland at the front, at the base of your neck. It's like butterfly shaped, and it is fairly small. You don't usually see it. If you can see your thyroid, that means it's already enlarged and there's a problem going on. So it works behind the scenes. And if you picture your car, like you have the car and it's looking great. It has the four wheels. Your wheels have air. You have gas in the tank. You have oil in it. And I'm saying all of this as not a car person, but it just makes sense in my brain. So hopefully it'll make sense in yours. Well, the thyroid is kind of like what gets your car's gasoline to the engine. Your thyroid is like the spark plug of every single cell. It puts out this hormone that allows each cell to basically turn on. So you can have all of the proper nutrition and fuel, but if it's not getting to the cell, if your cell can't turn on, then your cells aren't going to work well. And if your cells aren't working well, then your organs aren't working well. And if your organs aren't working well, then you are not working well. So it's a tiny little gland, but it controls pretty much everything as far as how your cells work.
That is really interesting. I myself have a thyroid condition. I have central hypothyroidism, so I have to monitor the free TH, and it took a while to figure out what I had, because they thought at first that I just had hypothyroidism, and then they had me on the wrong medication or too much. I can't remember. It was so long ago. And it took them a while to figure out that it was the different type of thyroid, hypothyroidism. And with that, can you tell us a little bit about the different type of thyroid conditions and what makes each of them different?
Mm-hmm. So basically they fall into two different categories. Is your thyroid producing too much hormone or too little hormone? And so for you and for me, the reason our thyroid is putting out too little differs, but both of them would be, like you said, hypothyroid. So hypo meaning too little. The thyroid is not producing enough hormone. And then you have the other spectrum, or the other end of the spectrum, which is too much. And then that would be hyperthyroid. For both ends of the spectrum, there's going to be multiple things that cause it. But we first want to know like where we are in the spectrum. And then we always want to ask the doctor what caused it. And for a lot of doctors, honestly, they won't dig into that. Like you experienced, they'll just say, oh, you're hypo, take this medicine. And we really want to help our doctors know that they need to dig in and figure out, well, what is the root cause? So I'm glad that your doctor was eventually able to help you figure out exactly what was causing it. For 90% of the people who have hypothyroid, it is caused by Hashimoto's, which is not necessarily a thyroid problem. Hashimoto's is an autoimmune problem where your immune system is attacking your thyroid, and then you get thyroid symptoms.
Interesting. Yeah, my sister has that as well, and my mom had her thyroid removed, but they believe that before she had to have it removed, that she had Graves.
Yeah, so Graves would be also an autoimmune problem, except it's causing hyperthyroid. And yeah, it's one of the most common reasons that they take out the thyroid. There's like, oh, you're making too much, let's just get rid of it.
Yeah. And since then, she's had so many issues, and now has like magnesium and calcium issues, and needs to get her blood work taken on a regular basis. And yeah, it ended up being a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. So many times what the medical community offers us is a quick fix, but it doesn't help us long term. It causes more problems.
Yes, for sure. And with different thyroid conditions, would an endocrinologist be the best person to see for that in general? Or are there other special doctors that work with different parts of like the thyroid, like different conditions?
Right. That is a great question. And I'm going to go back to my philosophy on life. You have to find the right fit. You can find an endocrinologist that is a great fit. So endocrinology as a specialty, it just means they are specialists in the hormones. And your thyroid is one of your biggest hormone things. So an endocrinologist would technically be the right person. But I have heard of some endocrinologists, and all they want to do is see you, look at your labs, and give you medication. They don't want to help you figure out what is causing your problems. Why are you hypothyroid? Why are you hyperthyroid? They don't want to help you look at, you know, what kind of diet is going to be ideal for you. They are just so like black and white, like check this box, here's your meds, go home. And so while they are the specialists that would technically be the best, sometimes you can find a regular doctor, like a general doctor or a nurse practitioner, who's really open to helping you dig into what are the root causes. So for myself, I have not ever seen an endocrinologist because I went online and I went searching for a nurse practitioner because as a nurse, I just love the philosophy of the nursing field. Our base world view is different than doctors. So I went looking for a nurse practitioner and I found one that is willing to help me dig into the root cause and help me navigate my own thyroid stuff. So it really comes down to like who you find and how much they're willing to work with you. But technically, yes, an endocrinologist is a thyroid specialist. So that kind of answers your question and it kind of makes it harder.
No, that makes complete sense. I know for me, when I first got diagnosed, I went to a pediatric endocrinologist and she ended up consulting other endocrinologists to try to figure out what was wrong with me. And she was awesome. But then obviously when I became an adult, then she wasn't able to see me anymore. And so my PCP at the time ended up working with her and she was awesome. And she like told him like what he needed to look for and all that kind of stuff. And so he ended up helping me moderate it and stuff like that. And then when he left the practice, it's kind of been back and forth. And then when I was having different issues with my migraines and started getting sicker in other areas, I went back to an endocrinologist to make sure that it wasn't something that like the PCPs were missing. And since then I, you know, get my labs done and see them once a year. But in between there, it's to the point where I haven't really been seeing somebody on a more regular basis.
Right. So once a year, you must be really like stable, are you?
Yeah, they've found that it is stable. I mean, I have other things that are not very good with my health, but my labs and stuff are coming back fine. And like nothing that I'm experiencing is necessarily related to my thyroid. Like I deal with lots of migraines and stuff, but they don't think it's because like my thyroid is off or whatever, because I experienced that even before I had a thyroid condition and it's just gotten worse. Plus I have lots of like spine issues and all of that play into my migraines. So it's kind of like a bunch of things, but because my labs for years have come back fine and I haven't had any new symptoms besides additional like migraines and silent migraines, and I see a neurologist, they haven't felt like I need to be seen on a more regular basis.
Okay, cool.
And with that, with doctors and stuff, how, like, what is some of your biggest advice to, for people to advocate for their health with their doctor?
The number one thing that I recommend is just recognize your role in your own healthcare. When I started as a nurse, I would talk to these like older nurses in the ER and they would tell stories about when they started, a doctor would walk into the room and everybody had to stand up and acknowledge that the doctor was there. And then after the doctor sat down, then you could sit down. I was like, oh my goodness, like, that is not where we are anymore. But that wasn't that long ago. So doctors, although they are better now, they kind of have this philosophy just, you know, passed down through the years that what they say goes. And that's not true. That is not how we need to work in today's age. Today, every single person, you need to know that you are the CEO of your own health. That means you are the top decision maker. Your doctor, your PCP, your endocrinologist, your chiropractor, everybody is on your team. They're on like your board of directors. They are giving you the best advice that they can, and they are helping you from their standpoint. But you are the CEO. You have to take their advice and put it together with what everybody else is saying and how you know that, you know, is going to work for you. So if the doctor, for example, one doctor told my sister when she was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, she said, you need to cut out gluten and dairy and something else. And my sister just like panicked and froze. She's like, that takes out everything that I'm eating. And it takes, it, is going to cause problems for like the people I eat with, because she eats at her in-laws a lot. She ended up not doing anything. And whether that was a good decision or a bad decision, like, it was her job as the CEO of her health to look at the pieces and say, what will work? What won't work? How can I make the best of this? And then to make that decision. So just always think that you are the CEO of your health. So that means asking questions. I mean, your doctor is on your board of directors. So ask them questions, ask them tough questions, and get some real answers so that you can figure out where to go from there.
I completely agree. I have had quite a few, I don't want to say bad doctors, but doctors that don't listen very well at all. I even had one time, I had a list of questions written down in a notebook. It might have been in my phone, whatever. And before, he just like said whatever he was going to say, and then was like, do you have any questions? And then I started to ask, and he's like, okay, nice to see you, and started to walk out.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
Like, but I'm like, excuse me, but I have like a list of questions. You asked if I had questions. And he then stood in the doorway and answered my questions. He didn't go back and sit down. And it was so awkward because I'm like, it just felt like he was like wanting to like just leave. And I'm like, this is not how this is supposed to be. This is terrible. And then I ended up switching to a different doctor. But I was like, this is just not okay. And so whenever I found somebody that listens and is great, I always hate when either they leave the practice or for whatever reason, I may have to switch. And I'm really glad at this point I have a good team of doctors that is good at listening and actually cares what I have to say. And if I have questions, they don't get up and try to leave.
Right. Oh my goodness. I'm so sorry that happened to you. And it really makes me mad, honestly, at the insurance companies, because the insurance companies run the doctor's offices and they make the dictates. They're like, you have to see this many patients in a day. And the doctors who, you know, they hopefully went into medicine to help people. Now they're just basically like minions of the insurance companies. And it makes me so mad. And speaking of things that you can do, you can go out of, not just out of network, but out of insurance completely. My nurse practitioner does not take insurance. And she gives me a full half hour. Like, just like, we have time to chit chat and like catch up on life before we dive into the visit, which is, I feel like, unheard of when you're going to see a doctor. And sometimes it's worth it. Just, I can use my HSA or my FSA money and pay for it. I just, you know, make my appointment with her. I see her and then I pay with my HSA card. Insurance is not involved, which means insurance does not tell her that she can't spend time with me.
That is really interesting. I never like thought about it that way. I do obviously know, like, with insurance companies, sometimes it can be super frustrating, especially like at the beginning of the year with trying to meet the deductible before like certain things get paid. And it's just a pain in the butt. And it's so expensive too, sometimes, where you have to pay so much a month and then you still have to pay so much when you get medication or right. see a doctor or get blood work or. But at the same time, when my husband and I did the math of how much certain things would cost without insurance, we're like, it's worth paying because we'd end up paying so much more. But if it goes up more so, like, it may not be worth it.
Right. Yeah, I did the same calculations. And we have insurance. Both my husband and I are nurses. So, you know, he's got a fairly good insurance. And we have 4 kids, so we keep our insurance. But when I was looking at, you know, just my thyroid care and my Hashimoto's care, I added up what I would end up paying out of pocket even for a clinic visit that's not prevention. You know, you get that one, quote, free preventative visit every year, but then everything else you have to pay for. And it still ended up to be the same or even a little cheaper to go see my nurse practitioner out of network or out of insurance.
That's crazy. I know when we had moved at one point and I was looking for doctors, like hardly any of the doctors in the area that I was at took insurance, which was very strange to me because I had like never heard of so many doctors in one area that didn't take insurance. But it ended up being, when I saw one of them, not very expensive. Like, I think it was about the same amount that I was paying to see my chiropractor with insurance when I there was no insurance involved.
Right, right.
And with different thyroid conditions, like I had mentioned before, my mother and my sister both have a thyroid condition. But is thyroid conditions, or are thyroid conditions, I should say, genetic?
There is a genetic component, yes. So every single person is unique. And like if you are exposed to, let's say, inflammation, and I have some inflammation, where that inflammation is going to go in your body is going to be different than mine because of our genetic history. And also, you know, any injuries that we've had or anything like that. You know, some people will say they can feel the weather coming in or the weather changing due to an old injury. So we have injury history, but we also have genetic history. And so, yeah, when things go wrong in the body, that tends to be, there is a genetic component, especially for thyroid. Also, there is just the familial history. So, you know, what your mom does and how she raised you, like, let's say, like fluoride is one risk factor for thyroid because it impacts your iodine uptake, and the thyroid needs iodine. So let's say your mom was really good with the recommended dental care, and she did the fluoride treatments for herself. And when she was pregnant, she had dental care. And then growing up, she made sure that you guys got your dental care and had your fluoride treatments. Maybe you did the fluoride, like chewable tablets that were really like pushed for a little while. And so you were raised with the risk factors. So maybe it wasn't necessarily genetics, but it was just how you've been raised, because she did the best that she could with the information that she had available. And then, you know, it's not, so I guess what I'm trying to say is sometimes it's genetics and sometimes it's what families do that are passed down. And then the next generation does the same thing because they don't know any different. Does that make sense? I feel like
that makes complete sense. I think that, you know, can be true for, you know, obviously emotional and mental health too. That can play into how you were raised and whether or not a parent or whoever was mainly in your life worked through different trauma they dealt with. And then, so it makes complete sense to me. And with that, with different things like natural things and medication, what are some of like the general medication or natural options that you would recommend people look into?
Well, one thing I found this week while I was doing some research for my podcast episode, and it's chamomile tea, which just like, I was like, wait, what? they did one study and people who have chamomile tea at bedtime, they reduced their risk of overall thyroid problems by 80% over their lifetime. And my mind just like, it was blown, because how could something so simple, an herbal tea, make such an impact? But the research looked good. I did read the, you know, the full research paper. So that's like something so simple. And I think one thing that goes along with the chamomile tea is just having a bedtime ritual, having a bedtime routine, because sleep is going to be foundational for anything that you have going on in your health. It's while you're sleeping that your body is healing, it's renewing, it's restoring, it's rebuilding, it's cleaning things up. So we really have to prioritize sleep. And people don't like to hear that because sleep is hard for us. You know, we want to have our phones in bed. We want to have a TV or a screen before bed. We want to push our bedtime back. And then, you know, we get up before we would naturally wake up. So sleep is hard. But yeah, chamomile is one. Vitamin D is another thing that is so helpful for anybody and everybody. If you don't know what your vitamin D status is, it's really easy to check it. I have just bought little kits online. There's several different companies that have them, and they're all about $40. They send a little card to you in the mail, along with a little lancet. So you poke your finger, put a little drop of blood on the card, mail it back in, and within a week you have your vitamin D level. Most of us are deficient. Ideally, you would want your level to be around 80 is what I have seen in the literature. And when your vitamin D level is up, that helps you, I think it's with over 300 different things in your body is what, or not just in your body, of your immune system, that vitamin D helps facilitate. And I might have that number wrong, but I know that vitamin D is huge with the immune system. And then, you know, as a result, your thyroid is, you're going to have D decreased risk for thyroid problems. So vitamin D is like, is my go-to. If somebody wants to do just one thing, vitamin D.
That is really good to know. I mean, I take vitamin D on a daily basis, and in once the weather's nice, I am outside at least a little bit every single day. And I also drink chamomile tea a lot before bed. So nice. I didn't realize that that was helping, but that's
awesome.
And as far as like natural things, like when it comes to diet changes, are there any specific foods that you know of that are beneficial for the thyroid?
In general, you want to cut out anything that's inflammatory. Inflammation is a root of pretty much every single disease that you can think of. So we want to reduce inflammatory foods. And inflammatory foods would be number one, sugar. And then dairy and gluten are very inflammatory for a lot of people. Not everybody, but a lot of people. There are some who would suggest that it's inflammatory for 100% of people. I can't tell you if it is or not, but you know, try it. Try taking something out of your diet for a while and see how you feel. And if it's going to be gluten, you have to do it 100%, and you have to do it for 100% for at least 30 days, because it takes that long for your body to to notice a difference. For me, I did not ever want to go gluten-free, but my youngest son, when he was about 4 months old, he started getting eczema head to toe. And because he was exclusively breastfed, I knew that it was something that I was eating or exposing him to. So I had to go on an elimination diet, and we'll do anything for our kids. Like, we'll do it better than we would for us. So I was 100% gluten-free. And then when I tried it again, he was fine with it, but I wasn't. My body had been very thankful for the break, I guess. And then when I tried to reintroduce it, my body was like, no, we're not doing that again. So now I am gluten-free. And gluten is interesting because not only is it inflammatory, but it also acts as a thyroid mimic. So if you do have an autoimmune process going on that's attacking your thyroid, then you know, adding more gluten in can cause more chaos within your immune system, and it can make that worse.
That is very interesting. So I actually went gluten-free before I found out I had a thyroid condition, partly because I had other issues. And then when I broke my tailbone and I was in so much pain, we stopped eating it to help with like the inflammation factor. Because obviously that's going to make it worse. And I found out that it cleared up my acne and helped with other pain that I was dealing with. And when I tried to reintroduce it after I felt better, once my tailbone healed, I was so much worse and it just was not good. And so I haven't eaten gluten besides accidentally a couple times in 15 years.
Wow.
16 years. And it is, what's it called? Way better, like with all the options nowadays. And I think that sometimes people are like, oh, I don't want to cut it out because it's going to be so hard and everything I love has gluten. And I get it, because I'm the same with dairy. I would not cut out dairy unless I absolutely had to. And when I'm sick, I don't really eat a lot of dairy. But otherwise, I love cheese and I love dairy. But there's so many options for gluten-free that I think that people don't necessarily realize. And like, there's like one for one flour. And so like, there's so many ways that you can do it. And sometimes I'll even make things and my husband would not have known that it was gluten-free. The only reason that he knows it's gluten-free is because I can eat it.
Right.
So, so he'll be like, oh, are you sure? And I'm like, babe, I'd be breaking out in hives right now if I was eating it normal. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. I didn't know that it would impact my thyroid. So it's good to know now that I'm doing things that I didn't necessarily realize were good for my thyroid health.
Right. It's always nice to know. Yep. Yep. When you're doing things and you find out, oh, that was actually good for my thyroid too. It's always like, oh, yay.
Yes, yes, exactly. And what were some of your symptoms when you found out that you had Hashimoto's?
My biggest one was my skin. I had It wasn't necessarily eczema. It was more like a psoriasis, but I could not clear it up. I was doing everything. And when I went in, it was actually my chiropractor who looked at my skin and looked at me, and she's like, I think this is actually your thyroid. The base of your neck looks a little inflamed. And so that's how I did my testing, and or how I started down that path. And then working on my thyroid fixed my skin. I also, in retrospect, I can absolutely see that, I had a low grade depression going on that whole time, and I was blaming it on my skin. I'm like, I'm just so itchy. Of course, I just don't feel like myself, but I was depressed. I had the skin stuff. I was taking a nap at least, 5 or 6 times a week. I could not make it through the day. I would wake up already looking forward to the nap, and then the nap was only to get me through until bedtime. I was like a chronically exhausted pigeon. When you talk about, like, are you a morning lark or a night owl? No, I was a chronically exhausted pigeon. And so it was kind of those three things: the exhaustion, the depression, and my skin.
I remember the exhaustion for sure. And I was 16 at the time. And so being, young and everything, it wasn't normal. It also wasn't normal for me. And I also lost a ton of weight and was cold like all the time. And I run warm generally. So the fact that I was wearing like jeans and a sweatshirt and long sleeve shirts in the summertime
Oh.
was definitely a sign that something was not right. And I think at my lowest, I was generally, I think, like 130-ish pounds, like average weight for my height. And then I ended up being between, I think it was 95 or it might have been 96
Oh my
pounds. And it
goodness.
was like, it felt like overnight. Like I didn't even realize. And then my mom was like, why are your clothes so baggy? This is not right. And we weighed. I weighed myself and I was like, yeah, that's not good. And I was like taking naps and not wanting to get up in the morning. And I'm definitely a morning person. And so those were like some of the major things that I noticed that I was like, yeah, this isn't good.
Yeah, that's a lot of weight to drop.
Yeah. And I don't even know how much time it was. I just remember it felt like it was like overnight. But at the same time, it was slow enough that I didn't fully notice until like my clothes were like super baggy. And with your condition, what are different things that you do to manage it besides not eating gluten and different things that we've already mentioned?
Yeah, so the first thing I did when I got my labs back is I handed them to my husband and I said, I don't understand. Please figure this out and tell me. Because up until that point, with my background in the ER, you have to know pretty much a little bit about every single thing. And then I went back to school for health education and I learned about how everything works together. So you could stop me on the street, you could ask me about anything related to health, and I could tell you, what the disease is, what caused them, root causes, what you can do. But thyroid stuff, I could never get to click in my head. So when I knew I was getting thyroid labs, I was so scared because I was like, I don't understand it. If it's thyroid, I don't know what to do. So I handed the labs to my husband and I said, please figure these out for me and explain it to me. And so he got me through like that first day. He explained what was going on. And then I could go back and I could do all of the research. And I did. I spent probably a week straight studying, reading the research, and figuring out everything. And I came up with the eight most common root causes. And then I looked at those and I decided that for me, I needed to focus on stress and sleep. And so those were the two big things that I focused on. Like, it wasn't, I didn't immediately turn to medications. I didn't immediately make diet changes. I was already gluten-free. But I realized that I needed to clean up those root causes. I need to sleep better and have less stress. And those are still two of the things that I work on pretty much every single day. I do look at the whole person, so I feel like there's always things that we could be doing in each aspect of the whole. And when I look at the whole person, it's body, mind, spirit, diet, environment. So I'm kind of always working through that framework. Like, is there something physically that I could be doing right now for better health, like a goal? Is there something in my diet? Is there something for spiritual health? Like, am I expressing gratitude every day? Is there something in my environment? Am I going outside in nature every day, like you said you do? And then body, mind, spirit, diet, environment. Which one did I miss? Oh, mind, reducing stress. So I feel like just looking at the whole and taking simple actions. Like, I never want to do something that's too big. I just want to work on a simple and sustainable things. Like, can I go out in nature every day? Well, not for the last little while, but pretty soon I will be able to again.
Yes. And with your stress levels and stuff, what are some of the things that you do to alleviate stress and to work through that?
Stress, again, I bring it back to that whole person framework. So you can have physical stress, you can have mental stress, you can have spiritual stress, you can have dietary stress, and you can have stressors in your environment. So I've tried to clean up kind of in all of those areas. The things that like made the biggest impact was physical stressors. I love to run. Running for me is a stress reliever. However, it was putting a lot of physical stress on my body. And I noticed that when I run, I exacerbated my Hashimoto's symptoms. So I was like, well, as much as I really want this running for my mental stress, I have to cut it out because the physical stress of running is greater than the stress relief. And so that was one of the first things I did, is I had to figure out what my body could and could not do for exercise. And then another thing I had to do was I had to like cut out my relaxation time. I would be, you know, trying to relax and watching a fun movie. But meanwhile, you know, all of the suspense on the screen, your brain doesn't know that that's a screen. Your brain doesn't know that it's not real. Your brain interprets it as like happening to you right now. And so I realized that the movies I was watching and the books I was reading, I mean, they weren't like bad. They were more like CSI or Law and Order type things, but my brain was interpreting that with too much stress. So I had to switch to like, just like, I don't know, more romantic comedies. If I'm going to watch a movie, it's going to be something that makes me laugh. And if I'm going to read a book, it's going to be more like fluff instead of something that's like, you know, is this person going to get away or are they going to get murdered? So, yeah, so that's how I kind of attacked my stress.
That makes complete sense. I definitely have, like, I'm literally, like, in the middle of binging Law and Order SVU. But yeah. By that, I mean, I'm watching an episode or two a week and taking a break in between because it is so intense, but it's so good. And I had never seen it before. But with so many seasons, it's going to take me forever and a day to get through them all.
Yes, it will.
It's so good, but it is really stressful. And also, as somebody that's experienced some of the things that they deal with in the show, if it's too graphic or like they show it happening or the person is, you know, explaining in detail, some of them aren't as graphic, but some of them I'm like, I this triggered too much. I now need to watch something else. So I definitely have shows that I watch that I'll put on that either I know what's going to happen or I know it's funny and, you know, decompress or listen to music or do something else, because I agree. Some of those things, definitely, even if it is just a show, can be very stressful.
Yeah. Especially. Yeah. And I kind of monitored that by like, what am I waking up thinking about? You know, if you wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom or something, like what is your brain already thinking about? And if it's thinking about that show or that episode, or if you have like spin-off dreams, I'm like, yeah, that was too much. Now I have an Aura ring and that monitors my stress level and my stress response. So now it's easier to like, okay, I read that book and it was really, really, really good, but my stress went up. Now I can see it in hard data.
I've never heard of that ring. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it is. It's just like one of the, you know, health wearables. Mm-hmm. And the reason I looked at it first is because I refuse to have any EMFs around my bed. Like, I don't have my cell phone near my bed. I turn it on airplane mode. And a lot of the watches and things, they will still emit EMFs or electromagnetic frequencies while you're sleeping. And that interferes with your brain. And it does other things too. and the Oura Ring does not. It's zero EMF when you have it in airplane mode, and you can have it on airplane mode overnight, or if it's not in airplane mode, it's really, really low EMF, and it tracks like pretty much everything the other ones do. It tracks your steps, which is not super accurate because it's a ring. It tracks your heart rate, your stress level, and it's a really good sleep tracker. Its specialty is sleep and stress. And so those are the reasons I got it. It also now does like oxygen sensing. So when my family had COVID, I made sure to turn that part on so I could, you know, watch and make sure that I was breathing okay, which I was, and I turned it back off so that I could conserve my battery.
That is really interesting. I'm assuming because it's a ring, it wouldn't show anything on the ring itself. You'd have to look in an app, correct?
Correct. Yep. Whenever you sync it, then you get all of the data for the day. You can sync it as many times as you want during the day. And it does have the inactivity alert. So, you know, if I'm looking at my phone and I've been sitting at my computer for a long time, my phone will give me the alert from my ring saying, do you think that you should get up and move? Yes, I probably should.
That is really interesting. I have a smartwatch, but I might have to look into that because I like the idea of that. That's really cool. Where do you find them? Is it just like on Amazon, or do they have a website, I'm assuming?
Mm-hmm, they've got a website. And, you know, now that I've talked to you about it, you'll probably get ads in your Facebook feed.
Very true.
It's Oura. I think it's .com. But if you just search for Oura ring, it'll come up.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the information. And I know that we talked a little bit about like different signs that we experienced in order to realize that we were having an issue with our thyroid or just an issue in general. But what are some of the signs that somebody should probably get checked out to see if they have an issue with their thyroid that we may not have mentioned?
It's really hard, honestly, because the thyroid is that little ignition switch for every single cell in your body. Mm-hmm. So it can affect every single person a little bit differently. So across the board, I tend to think of it as, you know, things are slowing down. So mentally, that means like you might be depressed. Because if you think of, you know, that slowing down, you're going to be depressed. The hyper would be the opposite. A lot of people are anxious when they're hyperthyroid. Again, slowing down, you think about the hair, your hair is going to be slower to grow and you're going to lose more. People have thin hair. That's one of the number one things that drive women to go find a treatment because they're most concerned about their hair. The outer thirds of your eyebrows, if that seems to be thinning, that's also an indicator. Of course, we talked about the base of your neck. If you have enlargement there or swelling, definitely get checked out. Other things, again, the fatigue, constipation is another one, because when you think of things slowing down, if your gut is slowing down, constipation becomes a real issue. But if you go online and you Google, like, what are the common thyroid symptoms? I did that when I was doing my like week of research. And I had regular lined notebook and I was doing three columns and I filled up, I think, 2 pages of like, quote, common symptoms. And then I was like, this is too many. I like, how can you have that many, quote, common symptoms? But it really varies for every single person. But I would think that, you know, in talking to so many people, the fatigue, the hair loss, the feeling cold, the depression, those are the top things. And on the depression note, it's actually standard of care that when somebody goes in for depression, they will be evaluated for thyroid function, because I think it's over 50% of the time it's not actually depression, it's thyroid. And so if you fix the thyroid, then the depression will also leave, or, you know, at least resolve to your baseline. So that would be my number one thing. If you think you have depression, or if you feel depressed and your provider has not screened you, number one, they should have, but they often, you know, don't. So get screened. And then if you're feeling fatigued, get screened. And don't allow your doctor to say, well, you're a woman, or, well, you're a mom, or literally I've heard this, not to me, but to somebody else. Well, welcome to mom life. Like, no, that is not okay.
Like, what on earth?
Yes. Yep. No. I don't even know how they could have thought that that was okay.
That is terrible. And now that you mentioned the hair loss, that was another one of the symptoms. I don't know why that wasn't a big thing for me to remember, but I do, that was one of the things. And I have really thick hair. And so the fact that I was losing so much, I mean, my hair is curly, so I do tend to lose more than maybe someone with straighter hair daily, but it definitely was like big balls of hair almost every single day. I don't think I had any bald spots, but it definitely was a lot of hair coming out compared to people.
Right. You talk about like the shower mouse at the end of your shower. It's getting bigger.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I know at the beginning you had talked about that you educate people on their thyroid. So how do you do that besides your podcast?
Yeah, the main way is the podcast. I also try to take the podcast and turn that into a blog for people who like read better than listen. And then I have a course. It's called a Holistic Hashimoto's Course. And it's for people who want to dig into their root cause and who don't want to go through the weeks of research that I did. I have it, you know, all right there for you. Like, here are the root causes and here are the most simple and sustainable ways to fix those. And so that is the other thing I have for people. And right now, I'm not sure when you're going to release this, but for the first 20 people in 2024, they're getting a really big discount. And that as of our recording date, which is February 7th, I still have openings for that discount.
That is awesome. So this won't be out for quite a bit, but I can try and remember to put a link for that in the highlights, not the highlights, the stories on the podcast Instagram. So that way, if anybody is interested, they could check it out before then. Cool. And how much is it normally? And like, what is the discount?
It is $497. And for the first 20 and 24, it's only, I think, $197. I have it over half off.
That is awesome. And with the podcast, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's called Health with Hashimoto's, and it is on every platform that, you know, every app that you can listen to. I help people figure out their root causes with that podcast, but my main goal is that the listener will leave every single episode like with hope and to know one simple and sustainable thing that they can do for their health, specifically for their thyroid health. I had one friend who has thyroid problems and listens to my podcast, and she was telling me about another podcast she found, and she said, you know what? They gave me information, but they didn't give me any hope, and they didn't give me any next steps. And I really love that you do both of those things. And that just meant the world to me, because that's always my goal. And to know that it's really coming through for people who didn't even know that was my goal. I just love that. I want you to have hope, and I want you to have simple, sustainable actions.
That is super awesome. That is so sad that there's another podcast out there that's not doing that, because I feel like even if it wasn't simple things, like next steps or steps to take would be a kind of obvious given that you want to give. That is so odd. And what made you decide you wanted to start the podcast and the blog to start with versus just doing the course?
It really came from my fear of having thyroid problems, because since I knew so much about everything else and since I had so much training, I mean, 4 years of nursing school, 17 years in the ER, and then 2 more years of holistic nursing education, if I still couldn't figure out thyroid stuff, I figured I'm sure that other people who don't have this much training are completely confused as well, and I have to help them. My pain and my struggle can be used for somebody else's good. And that it all happened right at a time when one of my friends on Instagram, who I had been leaving voice messages for, she would like probably once a week, she'd be like, you really need to start a podcast because you have a good voice. And I was like, yeah, no, I don't know what to talk about. No. And then I got my diagnosis and I was like, oh, okay. So I guess this is why.
That is awesome. And how long have you been doing your podcast?
About a year and a half.
That is awesome. And do you put out an episode every week, or is it just when you have inspiration for what you want to talk about?
I put it out every single Thursday morning, and then I try like once a month to do a book review bonus episode because I love to read. And then, I figure again, if I'm reading, I can help other people like decide is that book going to be helpful, or maybe tell them a little bit about that book. So again, just sharing my love of learning and helping people know what's the next step for them.
I love that. And what kind of books do you talk about? Is it like all like self-improvement kind of books, or are they, is it just a variety of whatever you happen to be reading?
The ones I talk about on the podcast are usually thyroid specific or like stress. Like the last one I reviewed, it's I think a daily self-care journal is what it's called. And so that one, I just loved the premise of that journal because it's looking at the whole person and it's approaching stress from like a mindset like I do. So I reviewed that on the podcast because I feel like everybody who's listening also needs, a bit of self-care. So I reviewed that one. Some books I will get and I'll get pitches in my email, like, will you read this book and talk about it? And I just don't feel like it's a good fit for my audience. So I won't review those. Like the last one I got is called Therapy Chickens. I have a bunch of therapy, or I have a bunch of chickens, and I thought it was a really cute book. It was a really fast read, but I probably won't review that one because it's not going to pertain to the like thyroid listeners.
That is a very, I've never heard of that book, and now I kind of want to read it because it sounds interesting.
Was
Just
good.
by the title.
It's like beautiful artwork with just this little snippet of wisdom with each picture. It's just a fun book.
That is awesome. And is there anything that I haven't asked or we haven't talked about that you would like to add?
You know what? You asked about how we can go to see our doctors and how we can advocate for ourselves. And I do have like a printable that I created for people with thyroid problems, and it has the top 10 questions that are going to be helpful in your visit. And the last page is printable. Like, so that all of the other pages tell you why is this question important and what are you hoping to learn. And then the last page is printable so that you don't have to write down the questions. They're all there. You bring that sheet in, and then you can just fill it in when the doctor tells you. And hopefully the doctor won't stand in the doorway and be rude like they were for you.
That is really awesome. Is that something that you could get me a link for so that I could put it in the description of the episode?
Absolutely. Yep. And it's free. I will definitely get
Awesome.
you that link.
Awesome. And was there any last things that you wanted to add before we wrap up the episode?
I just want every single person to know that you are valuable. You might feel like things are not working well right now. You might feel like your body isn't doing what you want, or your mind, or things might be going wrong and it's invisible. You might feel like nobody can see it. It doesn't count. And then you don't count, but that's not true. I want you to know that you are valuable. You matter. Every single thing that you're going through is it's valid, and there is hope. And I want you to know that.
I absolutely love that. And where can people find you?
I am at my podcast, Health with Hashimoto's, and then online, healthwithhashimoto's.com. And on Instagram, I am at EstherY.RN. And those are the best places to find me.
Awesome. And with the podcast being called Beautiful Legacy, I like to ask all of my guests, what kind of legacy do you want to leave and why?
I want to leave a legacy of people knowing that there's hope, that they can learn more, they can do more, that they can take a next step. I never want somebody to feel stuck. So whether that's my kids, whether that's the people listening to my podcast, the victim mentality that is so prevalent right now, it drives me crazy because there's always something that you can do. And I want everybody to know that if that could be my legacy of knowing that you're loved, knowing that there's hope and that you can do something, that's it.
I love that. And how would you say, besides your podcast, that you are making that happen?
I think being real with people, like I have never seen people as just the outside of them, and that kind of doesn't sound quite right. But I don't even remember what people look like sometimes. I remember who they are, like how they act, how they treat people, how they feel inside. When I was in the emergency department and I was taking care of a really, quote, difficult patient, like she was mean, she was rude, she was just hard to take care of. And then even when I was starting her IV, I was, you know, sitting there by her for a while, and I found out that she was a victim of human trafficking in her past. She had had so much trauma, and like no longer was she, you know, a difficult patient. Now she was somebody who I saw as it's just so much more of who she really was. And I think that's how I will leave that legacy, because for every single person that I encounter and that I have interactions with, I see them. And when you're actually seen and cared for and treated like you're valuable, it makes a difference.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you there. And to the listeners, as always, you are loved. You are worth it. You are priceless. And Esther, I really appreciate you giving us some of your time today.